We're joined today by Professor Mark Jacobson from Stanford University. Many people may remember Professor Jacobson from his report, I believe in 2015, with Cornell professors during the fight over fracking in New York. We showed that we didn't need fracking and that we could meet 100% of our energy needs by 2030, including a 40% reliance on developing offshore wind. Since then, he's written a lot of different studies at both state, national, international level, usually about how to get to 100% clean energy by 2050, though sometimes he's done a little bit quicker on that. But we asked Professor Jacobson to join us today because of some recent announcements by the Biden administration, both on offshore wind and then the Biden economic stimulus that recently came out. So why don't we start with the offshore wind by the Bureau of Ocean and Energy Management. You know, they're talking about 30 gigawatts of offshore wind by 2030. You know, what was your overall impression by the proposal?
Well, I think it's a great start. I don't think it's enough, nor nearly enough, to actually transition the United States to completely renewable energy. Just to give you an example, if we want to transition the entire U.S. to clean renewable energy by 2050 in all energy sectors, that's electricity, transportation, buildings, and industry, even for wind, offshore wind, to power like 17% of all this energy, we would need 850 gigawatts of offshore wind. So 30 gigawatts is a good start. They also have a goal of 100 gigawatts by 2050, but we need 850 gigawatts by 2050, which is actually very doable because with today's modern wind turbines, which are on the order of 10 to 12 megawatts in size each, that's only 850 gigawatts is about 100,000 of these large turbines. And you might say 100,000 wind turbines in 30 years. Well, that's a lot. But, you know, during World War II, the U.S. ramped up production of aircraft from almost zero to 300,000 aircraft within 5 years. So we're talking 100,000 wind turbines in 30 years versus 300,000 aircraft in 5 years. I think it's very doable. We really need to be more aggressive than the current plan, but it's great that he's got us off to a start.
Part of the proposal was to open up some additional areas off of New York City, Long Island, and New Jersey, which is considered sort of the best part of the planet for offshore wind. But one thing I was a little bit surprised about was they only called for about, I believe, $230 million or so for port infrastructure, whereas New York State, just in the last few months itself, invested $400 million between Sunset Park in Brooklyn and actually the Port of Albany here in the Capital District. You know, what are some of the other steps that, you know, the Biden administration should take to promote wind and also the deal? Apparently some of the fishermen raise concerns about where we place the turbines.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of infrastructure that's needed, but, you know, a lot of this will be paid for by the wind industry when they're implementing, and the money comes back through electricity sales. So I think, you know, it's not likely the government doesn't have to just put in all the money to do the transition. I mean, most of the costs are going to be borne by the wind companies, and then we'll get their money back over sales due to sales over time. In terms of fishermen, well, there's a big ocean out there, and the wind resources are incredibly strong all the way up through Maine, down to South Carolina, and you can even, you know, they're not so great in Florida, but they're still good. So, you know, you have the whole East Coast, and you know, the offshore, you can go off hundreds of kilometers or miles, and you have great resources. And now we have floating offshore wind turbines. So there's really no limit to how far out we can go. And we only need a very small percent of the ocean for all these, even if 100,000 wind turbines. 100, by the way, 100,000 is for the entire U.S., including the West Coast, the Gulf Coast, and the East Coast. So, you know, we're not talking huge swaths of water compared with the size of the ocean. So, you know, there's a huge amount remaining for the fisher people. And even in the areas where there are wind turbines, you can still fish.
So President Biden went to Pittsburgh this week to kick off his campaign, I think, for around a $3 trillion economic stimulus over the next decade. Green infrastructure, you know, some amount of money for clean energy, I think about $469 billion over the decade, some additional tax credits. He did get in Senator Schumer's proposal to really move to require all new cars in the United States to be zero emissions, electricity by, I believe, 2030. Is your impression that the scale that President Biden talking enough adequate to meet even his, goals for climate?
Well, the number one thing is he's actually putting an effort to approach a few different areas which were not being approached or funded before. So specifically the transmission system, he's putting a fair amount of funding for upgrading the U.S. transmission and distribution system. There's a fair amount of funding going into electrification of vehicles, so electric vehicles, and also some for energy efficient buildings, and also extending the tax credits for solar and wind and storage. So these are all important areas. And, the initial investment is quite a bit. Obviously you can always use more but investing them, there's a positive feedback as we've seen, because as you start deploying wind and solar and storage and even transmission distribution, the costs go down. And so that makes so, and then there's money available for more private investment as well. So I'm pretty happy with it. And considering that we've just spent trillions on for the pandemic to get people back on their feet, this is a pretty good outlay for clean renewable energy.
Are there other low hanging fruit that would be good to see the Biden administration try to push to accelerate the transition to renewable energy?
Well, the one area that I haven't seen covered too much is electrifying industry, because a lot of industrial emissions that need to be addressed, and that's one of the harder areas. Electrifying aircraft, going to some hydrogen fuel cell, but short haul flights would be electric. And really eliminating gas from buildings, although that's partly covered in this. They're making buildings more energy efficient and reducing emissions from buildings, but we do need more policies and laws on new construction should be all electric. Having gas in homes is really counterproductive in terms of solving the climate problem. Tens of millions of existing homes and buildings that have gas in them, and we need to retrofit those. So having even more resources go into that and educating people about that and what they can do, because people will save money in the end by transitioning their own homes and buildings to electric and eliminating any combustion in them.
So we have about 2 minutes left. I'm going to try to put in a two-part question, a little bit complicated, but in the energy package they put together for Congress at the end of last year, a fair amount of money both for developing carbon capture technology and also a fair amount of money to promote the expansion of nuclear power. Are those good investments for America at this point?
No, so carbon capture is where you try to take carbon dioxide from the effluent or the exhaust stream of a coal-fired power plant or gas plant, for example, or take carbon right out of the air. That is not a good investment, because you always need energy for that. And where does that energy come from? Well, there was one carbon capture plant built along with a coal plant. Well, there was a coal plant in Texas that had carbon capture equipment added to it. And how did they get that energy? Well, they built a natural gas plant just to provide the electricity for the carbon capture equipment for the coal plant. And so then you had more natural gas mining that resulted in emissions. You had leaks during the transport of natural gas that resulted in emissions. You had combustion of the natural gas that was not captured. So that resulted in both air pollution and climate damaging emissions. And the carbon capture equipment was so inefficient that it hardly reduced the carbon and carbon dioxide. And what did they do with the carbon dioxide? They shipped it to a nearby oil field to enhance oil recovery, and half the carbon dioxide went back to the air through that. This was so inefficient and costly that they mothballed this plant last year after spending $1 billion on it. So it was completely inefficient. It increased air pollution, it increased mining, it hardly reduced carbon, it increased oil production and combustion of that. So it's a boondoggle. Carbon capture is just a horrible idea, and we should not invest a single dime in it. It's really an opportunity cost. There's never a case where it's more beneficial to use carbon capture than to pay for renewable energy just to replace a coal plant or a gas plant. That's always better to do that. In terms of nuclear, it's same. The problems with nuclear are that it takes on average 15 years between planning and operation, costs five times more than new wind or solar. So 15 years from today is 2036. If we want to spend money on something that's available in 2036, it's completely useless to solving the climate problem, which we need to solve 80% of by 2030 in 9 years. So that's an opportunity cost in addition to all the risks, the waste issues, the meltdown risk, the weapons proliferation risk, the mining risk, and it's not CO2 free. There is CO2 associated with nuclear due to the mining and refining of uranium during the life of the plant. And also there's heat and water vapor emissions from the nuclear power plant as well that lead to higher temperatures.
We're out of time. We've been talking to Professor Mark Jacobson, Stanford University. Mark, do you have a website people want more information?
Yeah, well, I'll just mention, just finished a textbook that was published called 100% Clean Renewable Energy and Storage for Everything. That's available from Cambridge University Press and on Amazon, but it's really on how to transition states, countries, and the world to entirely clean renewable energy. And I'm easy to find at Stanford University. I have my website there.
Thank you very much. And this has been Mark Dunley for the Hudson Mohawk Radio Network.